Hey, welcome back. I hope everybody is doing well. Today, we're going to continue on with our discussion of this dual active bridge converter, the first example of these AC link category of converters. So last class, we kind of talked about generally what this class of topologies AC link converters is, and then said, maybe the most basic implementation is this dual active bridge converter, which we've got a full bridge on the primary, full bridge on the secondary, transformer and leakage inductance in the middle. Went through and looked at the waveforms of dual active bridge in steady state under this special case where V over VG is equal to N, or NT as I'm labeling the circuit here, but just the turns ratio of the transformer. So the transformer is really doing all of our voltage conversion ratio work. When we are operating in this unity normalized conversion ratio mode, the waveforms look like shown on the left. Go through and incorporating the impact of the parasitic capacitance of the devices. And we have four sub-intervals per half period, and our half period is either symmetric or anti-symmetric. So we can just analyze half of a switching period. So the other half is the same thing, just negative on all the AC waveforms. Assuming we've designed this such that we can get ZVS everywhere, then the waveforms look like this. We go through and we've got some resonance between the tank inductance and the primary side capacitance to zero voltage switch the primary side devices. Then this interval two, where we ramp the inductor current from negative I1 up to I2. Interval three, shut off all the secondary side devices, let the inductor resonate with the secondary side devices capacitance through the transformer to get zero voltage switching on the secondary. And then this interval four, we just kind of lock in the voltages and deliver a bunch of power to the output. We're at our peak current, and that's directly flowing from the input through the transformer to the output. If we have this conversion ratio equal to the transformer turns ratio, then VG is equal to V over N, and we have 0 volts across the inductor, so we get just a constant current during interval four. We go at all off this normalized conversion ratio, we'll have some ramping during this interval. But here with V over VG is equal to N, we get a flat inductor current during interval four. So like do now today is we're going to go through and sketch state plane for this mode of operation, solve it out, and then look at the net operation of this converter. We said at the end of class last time, we really do have two distinct resonances over the operation of this converter. We've got interval one where we have CP resonating with LL. In interval three, where we have CS resonating with LL, with the transformer in between the two. And in general, if there is any non-unity conversion ratio out of this converter, we probably are using different transistors on the primary than on the secondary, so we can't really assume CP and CS are the same thing or the same thing when we scale by the transformer turns ratio. So CS over NT squared is equal to CP. If we had that, these two R0s would be the same. In the majority of cases, that's not going to happen. So we are going to have two distinct resonances and two distinct normalizations to consider these two different resonances. So that means we're going to end up with two different state planes. One where we are looking at the primary side voltage versus the tank inductance, and one where we're looking at the secondary side voltage versus, say, the tank inductance or tank inductance reflected over on the secondary, either way. But in these two state planes, we're going to have a different normalization. So when we're looking at the primary and V base, we can pick whatever we want. Over on the primary, when it's resonant, we're going to have the primary side voltage go between minus VG and plus VG. So one useful selection here might be pick V base is equal to VG, but then I base is going to be equal to VG over R naught, with R naught is equal to square root of LL over CP. Over here on the secondary, we can again select our own V base, but we know we're going to have a different R naught. It's going to be, let's just say, T squared LL over CS. This NT in the numerator to make it fit. And we'll call that R naught prime to differentiate from R naught, which then means we're going to have a different I base, and we can, should we want, even select a different V base, since we'll be looking at the secondary side voltage, and the secondary side voltage goes between minus V out and plus V out. We could use VG again, but it'll make our lives a little bit easier if we just pick V out. Let's say V base prime is V out. I base prime is equal to V out over R naught prime. Okay. And then I'm going to relabel these axes prime, JL prime, MS prime. I'm just using that prime to denote normalization with respect to R naught prime. Okay. Without the prime, everything on the left I'm normalizing with respect to R naught. So we're going to go through and sketch these two state planes. One is going to be VP and IL normalized, and one is going to be VS and IL normalized. So let's just start from kind of the vertical axes on all three of these plots. So we're going to begin at these points here. I've got everything labeled. This is I peak. By symmetry, this must be minus I peak current in IL. And then the primary side voltage is at minus VG, secondary side at minus V out. So prior to the start of interval one, we're going to be at points on these plots of primary side, condense this a little bit, minus one. So we're at minus VG and we're normalizing by VG, and a current of minus J peak. So we'll start right here. Okay. Over on the secondary, we're at minus V out and minus J peak. So it'll look similar, but our normalization will take care of the minus V out, so that it's still here. And then minus J peak prime in our second normalization. So we'll start right there, and we immediately go into subinterval one. What happens in subinterval one, we have resonance on the primary side, where we are going to resonate up and achieve zero voltage switching of the primary side. During all of interval one, secondary side voltage stays locked at minus V out. So we know over on the secondary side, the current's going to increase a little bit, but the voltage is going to stay locked. So on the secondary side, we're going to look something like this. Interval one. On the primary side, we're going to do our state plane analysis. Okay, so we have minus V out over here on the secondary. We reflect that through the transformer. It's going to get scaled by NT. Since we are assuming V over VG is equal to NT, it means it's going to reflect over and have a magnitude of VG. It's going to be V over N is equal to VG. So our DC solution here is going to be minus VG volts on the capacitor and zero current in the inductor. Here, that's going to be this point as our center of resonance. And this will be our radius, R1. And we can kind of see here the current's going to be increasing, the voltage is going to be increasing, so we know we're going to the right on the state plane. Otherwise, we could say because the inductor current is negative, it's going to be flowing back into the capacitor, increasing its voltage. So our initial condition on our derivative is going to be greater than zero. Voltage on CP is rising. So that means we're going to be going to the right here, and we should have a resonant arc that does something like this, goes out until we hit normalized value of 1. We do, the voltage has gone from minus VG up to positive VG. We can turn on our FETs with zero voltage switching now. Okay. So our interval 1 is here. R1, R1, call this angle alpha. We're on the secondary. All we see is a little vertical increase. So that's interval 1. Then we go to interval 2. In interval 2, what happens, both the primary and secondary voltages remain locked, and the current just increases up from J1 to J2. So this value should be minus J1, based on what we called it, be minus J1 prime. Here in interval 2, on both state planes, the current just increases up to J2. It's prime on the right, regular on the left. Subinterval 2, subinterval 3, what happens? It's this little one here. The current increases a little bit. It's resonating with the secondary side capacitance. The primary voltage remains fixed at VG. So we're just going to see on the primary, similar to what we saw on the secondary in subinterval 1, some small increase from J2 up to J peak, with the voltage remaining locked. On the secondary, we're going to now have a resonance. Resonance looks like this. Again, we get a DC solution, reflect things through the transformer, VG. In this case, times NT is going to be our DC solution on the output capacitance. Again, because of our normalized conversion ratio, that just means V on the output capacitance. So our DC solution is right here, zero current in the inductor, V volts on the capacitor. So our radius is here. And we've initially got some positive current flowing into that capacitor, so its voltage is going to tend to increase. So we're looking at a resonance in this direction coming up until we can achieve zero voltage switching on the secondary. This angle, based on my system so far, should be gamma. I'm gonna call it delta though. That's a little bit out of order for the Greek alphabet, just because that's what some plots on the next slides call it. So this is our subinterval 3. And then the last subinterval in the half period, subinterval 4, everything's constant. The inductor current stays at J peak, primary voltage stays at VG, secondary voltage stays at V out. So on both of these, subinterval 4 is just a single point. And that's a complete half period. From there, what we do in 5, 6, 7, and 8 is the exact same thing, just in the antisymmetric polarity. So the rest of the half period, or the next half period, we would go through our primary side resonance, our inductor current ramping, and then our secondary side resonance. This thing is 5 through 6, 7, 8. Here we would have our primary side resonance, then our phase shift interval, and then our secondary side resonance. and that is our complete pair of state planes for the dual active bridge converter. This slide just has some animations where these little yellow dots will move on both the state plane and time domain waveform synchronously to show how these things match up. So starting from the beginning of subinterval 4, if nothing happens on the state plane as we go through that interval. And in subinterval 5, we see the primary side resonance, the secondary side just drops slightly. Phase shift interval, drop at a constant voltage on both state planes. Then secondary side resonance, we see resonance on the secondary side and just a little bit of current drop on the primary. And then we go through the remainder of the period symmetrically. Okay, so first thing we might want to look at is ZVS conditions. We have two resonant switching subintervals that occur during interval, I forget to label it on here, 1 and 3 on the secondary. So in interval 1, we want to get the primary side voltage from normalized value -1 to 1, unnormalized -VG to VG. In order to do that, this radius R1 has to be long enough such that when we rotate around, we hit 1 on the MP axis. It means R1 needs to be at least 2, difference between -1 and 1. So R1 greater than 2, R1 also happens to be equal to J peak, since we start right here on the -1 vertical line. So our ZVS condition for the primary side resonance is this J peak has to be greater than 2. Primary, say R1 is J peak greater than 2. And that's our ZVS condition. We've done this in the past for other converters, but I'm going to go ahead and again denormalize this equation just to look at the significance of it. So I'll multiply the left and right of this equation by I base, should give me I peak over on the left, it's greater than 2 I base. Plugging in I base, that is 2 VG over root LL over CP. And then what I'm going to do is square both sides and multiply by a half. So we're on the left, I'll get 1/2 I peak squared is equal to 2 VG squared, and then as I square this denominator, oops, let me make a little room, put my 1/2 here, square the denominator, I'll get rid of this radical. I'll have LL in the denominator, I can flip CP up into the numerator, and then I can push my LL in the denominator over onto the left here, and I'll get this equation, which is even a little more recognizable than in some of the converters we've looked at in the past. This equation says the energy in the inductor at the beginning of this interval has to be, oops, this shouldn't be equal, it should be my greater than sign. And a little more strictly, it should be greater than or equal to. So the energy in my inductor has to be greater than or equal to, was this? This is a capacitor energy, 1/2 CV squared. And the voltage is the voltage I need to move that capacitor across to get zero voltage switching. So 2 VG, I need to move that capacitor from minus VG up to positive VG. So it's just telling me the energy it takes to move the capacitor from minus VG to plus VG. So my ZVS condition, just saying energy balance here. However much energy I have in the inductor at the start of the interval, that has to be great enough such that when it resonates and transfers all of that energy over to the capacitor, I can span at least 2 VG voltage from all of that energy. Makes sense. On the secondary, what is our ZVS condition? So we'll hop back here, looking at the secondary. State planes look fairly similar. Main difference is that the primary is traversed counterclockwise, the secondary is traversed clockwise. And that means that as I go through this resonant interval on the secondary, I'm actually going towards the voltage of the DC operating point. On the secondary, I'm going away from it. I begin at the same voltage as the DC operating point and resonate up to higher voltage. On the secondary, start at lower voltage and resonate towards the DC solution voltage, which means that it doesn't matter what this radius is, as long as I'm somewhere greater than zero, even if I'm here, it'll resonate up I'm part of this circle, right? So on the secondary, there really isn't any ZVS condition. Even if I begin this interval at zero current, I'm going to get zero voltage switching. So on the secondary, there is no ZVS condition for this mode of operation. And why I emphasize that is this will fall apart at some point, and there is the possibility that we don't get ZVS on the secondary. And what it comes down to is if, even if I have zero current here, I can resonate up and achieve ZVS. But whatever this value is, this be some JX prime current, that's equal to my peak current at some different operating point. And that is some minimum amount of current that I'm going to have as my peak. So if I, for example, want to run this converter down to zero output power, but keep it running and regulate the output, I'm going to have to switch this early or sacrifice having a high peak current, somehow get rid of that, make sure it doesn't contribute additional power to the output in some other way. So as long as I can tolerate, based on my output power and my operating point, letting the secondary resonate up to this peak current, I can always get ZVS. But there are some operating points where this would put me at too high of a power, some minimum power below which I can't let it actually get ZVS. Makes sense. As long as we're assuming this is the mode of operation, there's no constraint, but at some point, really at low power, we may not be able to get ZVS, even though the converter could, it would put us at higher power than what we want. If the load demands lower power than that, we may have to hard switch the converter or change some mode of operation. Okay. So there's our ZVS condition. Now we can go through next and just solve the state plane, copying these two primary and secondary state planes onto this slide. So we've done this a few times. I think we can kind of go through this a little bit more quickly now. So we'll go through subinterval by subinterval, starting in subinterval one. Look at three over here, and this point is four. So in subinterval one, it's this primary side resonance. We get a pair of equations out of it. Based on R1, R1 is J peak. J peak squared is equal to, at the end here, 2 squared plus J1 squared. From our radii, then we'll get an equation for alpha. I'll write that as the arctangent of 2 over J1. Those are two equations for subinterval one. subinterval two we have is VG and the reflected output voltage in series additively across the inductor. So we're going to have T2 times VG plus V out over N. Over LL is equal to the change in current. It goes from I1 to I2. Based on our assumption, VG plus V out over NT is just 2VG. Let's say, write that off the side. We get that from the time domain, so we're going to normalize it to get it over to our state plane normalized parameters. We'll divide by I base. So we get J1 plus J2 is equal to, this thing up here is 2VG. When we divide by I base, we'll take the V base to just give us 2. And then the remainder of that, the R0 over LL, will give us an omega naught, and we'll end up with 2 theta 2. Over here on the left. Subinterval three is our secondary side resonant interval. Again, get two equations looking at radii. R2 will give us J peak prime squared. Is equal to, again, 2 squared plus, in this case, J2 prime squared. And then for delta, we're going to have, I missed the prime there. And I'll just write it as an arctangent of 2 over J2 prime. So interval three being the main one where we're stuck in this secondary side normalization with all of our prime variables. Then our last interval, subinterval four, we get no sort of equation out of state plane analysis because that is just a single point on both state planes here. And here, all the waveforms remain constant. We don't get any equation out of those dynamics. What we can do, though, is include subinterval four and what our overall period is. We're just looking at a half period, so Ts over two is equal to T1 plus T2 plus T3 plus T4. Multiply both sides by omega naught to normalize. It gives us theta one plus, oops, no. Subinterval one is resonant, would be alpha plus theta two plus delta plus theta four. Omega naught over here on the left, we'll have omega naught over FS over two. Normally when we do this step, when we use a complete period, we get two pi over F, but because we're doing a half period, that two will get canceled out. We get pi over capital F. There's all the individual subintervals. Last step in solving one of these converters is to do the averaging on any filter elements. I don't have a schematic left over here. So really our only filter element is the output capacitor. We've approximated it as an ideal voltage source here. Got this output capacitance that we're assuming small ripple. So we apply averaging to the output capacitance. What that's going to tell us is the average output current is equal to the average current coming from the converter. And we're going to write an equation for the average output current as a result. So that's on this slide here, average output current. That's what we want to write an equation for. I'm plotting I O of t from one of the plots in last lecture. Just copying that same curve. I of T is just the inductor current reflected through the transformer and rectified in a certain way, synchronous with whenever the secondary switches. So to not have to carry around a lot of N's, I'm going to instead write an equation for the average output current reflected back over to the primary so that I can use things like I1, I2, and I peak and not have to multiply them every time individually by N. So I'm going to write my equation for N times the average output current and our NT, I'm using them interchangeably here. And we can average over an entire period. We really only need to average over a half period because the output current is symmetric about the half period. If we average over one half period, that's the same thing as the average over a full period. So mathematically, that'll be 2 over TS times the integral from 0 to TS over 2. NT times I out of T dt. And as I work through this, N times I out is just the inductor current, but with its sign flipping whenever the secondary switches. So our inductor current would look like, for example, this. So over one half period, for example, over this half period, NIO is equal to IL. Over this half period, NIO is equal to minus IL. So it's flipped to rectify it. So as we go through, we can really just be thinking about the inductor current during each of these intervals. So same as normal, say NT times average I out is equal to 2 over TS times whatever the integral is in each of the subintervals in a half period. Q1 through Q4. And we'll go through and write equations for what each of these are. Most interesting one will be the first one, Q1. Is the average of the inductor current during this time where it's resonating with the primary side capacitance. Using our same old trick, the inductor current during this interval is equal to the capacitor current, Cp. So the integral of it is going to be just equal to C times the change in voltage. It goes from minus Vg to plus Vg. The integral of the current during that interval is Cp times 2 Vg. Q1, Q2, during this interval where we ramp from I1 down to minus I2. Integral during that is just going to be that time times I1 minus I2 over 2, the average current during the interval. For Q3, a little bit hard to see here. The current is zero during the entire interval going to the output. That is the only difference from the inductor current. Reason being, when we shut off all four of those secondary side devices, all the inductor current is circulating between the different CS capacitances and nothing goes through to the output. So during Q3, right here, there's zero current going to the output the entire time. Last interval, Q4, current just remains locked at I peak, so it'll just be I peak times T4. Okay, so the last step, we're going to normalize. And we will normalize by, again, multiplying both sides by 1 over I base. get me into J's on all my current terms. I'll still have these times left over, so I'm going to also multiply by omega naught over omega naught. I'll take the numerator, multiply it into everything inside the square brackets. I'll take the denominator and leave it out front and pair it with this 1 over TS. We go through and do that over here on the left. We'll have NT times J out. I'm going to define this, and I'm just going to call it J. Normalized, or the normalized output current scaled by this factor N. It's going to be 2 over TS, which is 2FS, and I'll pull the omega naught from the denominator out front. And then this 1 over I base and the omega naught in the numerator, I'm going to distribute to everything in here. Skip this first term for the moment. Omega naught times T2 will give me theta 2. J1 minus J2 from the I base, and J peak theta 4. 0, get rid of, nothing from Q3. This first term, CP2VG, so let's divide it by I base. We'll have our V base, which is VG in the denominator, which will cancel out this VG. What we'll be left with is 2 CP times the R naught from I base times omega naught from this term. Over here to the side, R naught, omega naught equal to root LL over CP, 1 over root LL CP. These LLs cancel. I have 1 over square root of CP times square root of CP equal to 1 over CP. So this R naught omega naught CP is just equal to 1. This whole thing goes to 1. And then my final equation, J is NTJ out. It's equal to my FS over omega naught is F over 2 pi. Again, the 2 cancels. So we get F over pi times all this stuff cancels out, and we just have 2 plus theta 2 J1 minus J2 over 2 plus J peak theta 4. Final equation averaging the output current. There's my solution, the average output current for the dual active bridge converter, assuming zero voltage switching and assuming the conversion ratio is equal to the transformer turns ratio. Either of those things aren't true if I fall below the ZVS threshold, or if my conversion ratio is any different, I would have to resolve different state planes. The next slide, what I'm going to look at is plotting the behavior of the converter while sticking in my normalized parameters. So taking this equation that we just wrote, plugged in here a couple of the equations to cancel things out. So for theta 4, plugged in the complete period less the other intervals, and then plugged in the equation for theta 2. Here it's J1 plus J2. Multiplying this J1 minus J2, you get an extra 1/2, and then J1 squared minus J2 squared. So it's just simplified slightly. But going through and solving this plot here, sticking in normalized domain where we haven't really selected specifically any power, any devices, any capacitances, we can look at the behavior of the converter independent of operating point and implementation. But does require a little bit of thinking around exactly the interpretation of this. But this is plotting J, which is my normalized output current scaled by the transformer turns ratio, versus J peak, what is the normalized peak current. Okay. This green line is the ideal. J peak is equal to J. Why I say that's ideal would mean the peak current stresses are equal to just the output current reflected back. This would be like from last class, we talked about this kind of ultimate converter. If we have zero phase shift, peak current stresses are just whatever the absolute minimum necessary is to deliver the output power. Since we're scaling the output current back by a factor of NT, if the primary side peak current stresses are equal to that, means we'd have near zero phase shift and like a square wave of current that's just always at the minimum value necessary to get the power through. Okay. Anything going down from that means we've got a little bit higher current stresses than what would be absolutely necessary for the power. So we're going to have a little bit higher conduction losses as a result. Okay. So I'm plotting all these different curves of F. F is Fs over F naught. The ratio of the resonant frequency on the primary to the switching frequency. Right. So a few things we can see from this. First, plotting the ZVS boundary for the primary, we need a J peak greater than 2. So it means we really like to be out at these points, out here. And you'll see there is some, for all of these points, minimum value of J. So we need some minimum output current on any of these curves to operate above the ZVS boundary. So we can't get down to zero output current while maintaining ZVS, except somewhere out here we can. I'll talk about that in just a moment. What each of these curves then are showing for F of different values, Fs over F naught, think of that in two ways. One is, okay, we're changing the switching frequency with one set of hardware. The other is we're changing around devices or tank inductance such that F naught is changing at a constant switching frequency, but we're changing the design of the converter in some way. Okay. Given that kind of our ideal is sticking up close to this point, initially we might think F is equal to 0.1 is a good design. F is equal to 0.1, let's call that F much less than 1. Plugging in here, that is Fs much less than F naught. And our resonant frequency is really fast with respect to our switching frequency, which in some sense is a good thing. It means this resonance that's going to get us from minus Vg to plus Vg happen way faster than the overall switching period, encompass a small portion of it, and then we can get pretty close to something like square wave voltage waveforms. More time we spend in this resonant interval and agree on the secondary, less time we are delivering our maximum current to the output, and our stresses will go up as a result. Oops, back one. So we're here. Issue with that is with that design, we end up needing a higher value of current at our ZVS bound. It means we're going to need to be at fairly high output power just to get ZVS. Now, exactly what that means because of the normalization depends. We have to look at the numbers there. Okay. The other thing you may notice about these curves is, particularly as we go down in F, there is a point where each of these curves peaks and begins decreasing again. This one's somewhere back here. So everything down here has higher J peak for the same current as some point to the left of this peak, right? For example, if I want to look at, say, this point here, I can get the same output current with either this point or this point. This one out here will have way higher peak current, but the same average output current. I'm going to have higher conduction losses, higher current stresses to get to the same output power. So we generally want to avoid this whole region, not operate down here. We'll show examples of why that occurs. It's basically the current no longer looks like this nearly square wave kind of trapezoidal thing, and it looks more like a triangle wave of current. So you get a really high peak, but a low average. We generally want to stay up in this region, kind of up here. Where we are pretty close to the ideal case, and then hopping around depending on what we can do for ZVS.
Dr. Kostin,
yeah.
Is beta just theta 2?
Theta. Where do I have theta?
Okay, so pi over f minus alpha minus theta.
Yep, you're right. Sorry. That should be theta 2. Excuse me on that. Pulling some older notation. Thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, it should be theta 2. Okay. So last few minutes here, I'm going to just show some example plots of solving across this pink dashed line here. And in fact, going out a little bit further off the side of this. So starting at this red point, right at the ZVS bound, right here, I'm plotting IL, VP, and showing this average output current reflected through the transformer turns ratio, just so it sticks in the same axes as IL. Right? So right at this point at the ZVS boundary, you can see is happening is VP does give us zero voltage switching. It goes all the way from some minimum value up to some maximum. But in doing so, the inductor current just hits zero right as it achieves zero voltage switching. I think I've got some numerical parameters for this design here. So the example waveforms, the state plane over on the right is general. Doesn't matter what the design is, to get into time domain waveforms, I need some parameters to denormalize with respect to. So this design was 1 megahertz, 12 volts V out, 150 volts V in. LL is 15 microhenries. CP is 300 picofarads. And CS is matched in this case, which I've said is not generally true, not generally something that'll be achievable, but set it here for this example design so that the secondary will look just like the primary, accounting for the transformer turns ratio. So you see right at this ZVS boundary, what happens is our resonance just to get zero voltage switching takes us all the way from the peak current down to zero. Since the secondary is the same, it's the same thing on the secondary. Our resonance takes us all the way up to J peak. And it means, okay, we can get zero voltage switching, but whatever this output power is, about 150 watts, this is ND times I out, 150 volts input, or about 150 watts, more or less. If I try to go below this power, the only way I'm going to be able to reduce the power is by hard switching some of these devices. It can no longer keep ZVS. So we go up on this curve up to higher values of J out. See, now the resonance is much faster. We do have some of this second subinterval. Our current, we still have remaining current when we get zero volt switching on the primary. So we now have this phase shift interval. But because of this phase shift interval, we got more of the period kind of over here in intervals 1 through 3 and less of the period. It's right in this nice power delivery interval. So we get a little bit larger margin between the peak current and the average output current. Okay. But we're all still decent operation. We go up to this peak, kind of at a point where we're taking up a little bit more time in the two dead times and the phase shift interval than we are in this power delivery interval. Things are starting to look a little bit more triangular. We're right at this peak. I let it keep going. We're going to keep increasing the phase shift. And now we've hit the point of diminishing returns. As we increase this phase shift more, our peak currents go up, but our average isn't increased significantly. So we're now at a point where we have higher peak stresses, but still the same average as something over here on the left. And then this one goes even further, way off to the right. As I keep increasing the phase shift, I'll get really high peaks. But basically, this entire interval cancels itself out in terms of an average contribution to the output current. Same thing over here. So it's really all of my power delivery is happening right here. I've got a really high peak, but still a low average. So these are points you want to avoid in the operation of this converter. It's giving you an output power that you could do with lower peak current. Talk a little bit more about practical design next class. That's the end of our class time, so we'll end there. Have a good weekend. We'll talk more about the DAB on Monday. Thanks, everyone.